ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello, I'm Clint Jasper. Thanks for joining me as we take a trip around a big country. This week, we're boarding a tall ship. It's a replica of an 1800s vessel, and it's taking its young crew members on a trip of a lifetime and teaching them some important lessons, including how to detox from their devices. We'll go behind the scenes at a cattle show and hear how handlers are trimming, blow-drying and gluing cows' coats so they look their best for the judges. And we'll meet some of the women carving out a career working with leather to handcraft horse gear. They're making bespoke saddles and bridles and getting great satisfaction from their work.
They really are passionate about the quality of the gear, being able to make something from scratch with your hands, and seeing people being able to use it daily, especially the gear that goes out on the stations. It's really being worked really hard, and it's somebody's tool and it's their best mate that they're using all day, every day, and to be a part of creating something of that quality, they really love it.
Taking the reins of a once male-dominated industry, we'll meet some of the women making saddles from scratch. That's coming up. First today, we're heading to Western Australia's goldfields, where the gambling game of two-up was legalised 40 years ago this month. The game involves a spinner throwing two coins in the air and is a popular pastime in the mining town of Kalgoorlie. Jared Lucas has the story.
Two up is probably the fairest game in the land. You can't beat two pennies going up there, and only can come down heads or tails, or one of each, which means the spinner got to keep going until he gets a result.
Reg Arthur ran two up games for decades and remembers when police raided the games.
I've been there when the cops come, and that's when I was young, and done a runner.
But you had to do the 100-yard dash.
I reckon Usain Bolt wouldn't have got a hold of me that day.
He's seen many fortunes won and lost.
The smart player will win his 200 or 300 and stop. If you stay there, well, you finish up without your boots. You've got to know how to play the game.
40 years ago, amendments to Western Australia's Police Act took effect, allowing the game commonly known as Bush Two-Up at Kalgoorlie to be conducted by two individuals, Jack Sheehan and Nick Turich. The pair had run illegal two-up games since World War II. Today, Mr. Sheehan's sons, Danny, Dave and Bill, are keeping the family tradition alive.
It's not as big a game now, you know, like in those days we used to play every day. But with the development of all sorts of things like internet gambling and stuff like that, we've only got really enough people to play once a week.
Danny Sheehan was ringmaster back then. 40 years later, not much has changed.
Yeah, how many games I've been to? I don't know, mate. I've lost count, I suppose, if you added it up. I mean, when you contacted me and said you want to do a story because it's been legalised 40 years, I thought, this bloke, is something wrong with his head. I don't think we've been playing 40 years. I thought it was last week. But, yeah, no, 40 years has gone by.
In Kalgoorlie, two-up is akin to a religion. Every Sunday, people come to their church. We're about 7 kilometres east of the town centre.
Pretty much is like a religion, yeah. And we're all people are all sort of part of a family here, you know. It's a little regular cloud of regulars and everyone knows everyone else.
The iconic corrugated iron shed was built in 1958. Before that, the locations for games changed constantly, Mark secretly, sometimes using a 44-gallon drum on the side of a road, which would lead punters down a bush track.
They used to play in all different various spots all over the place and, you know, they'd be getting raided here and raided there and, you know, quite a few funny stories out of that as well.
As Dave Sheehan explained, police knew they were fighting a losing battle.
Anyway, one time the policeman who was in charge here came along and said Dad to come in and see him, and he said, "My boys have got better things to do than be chasing you around the bush everywhere." So that's where this site was actually agreed upon, and like I said, 1958.
Before it was legalised, police tolerated two-up much like Kalgoorlie's famous brothels.
Kalgoorlie was that sort of frontier, you know, western town that where it had an obvious brothels, Hay Street, and it had the two-up. both very illegal, but both tolerated, but it was Kalgoorlie.
Kalgoorlie Boulders Mayor John Bowler says the game has heritage and tourism value.
I remember it was something adults did, that growing up as a young teenager, you weren't allowed to go to the two-up. And then we sort of got the age of 18, 19. It was illegal anyway. So we went out there for the first time and it was a whole new world. The characters, the excitement, the money lying on the ground, thousands of dollars just there. And if there was a bit of wind around, people would put the money under their feet. The tail better always held the money. And it was so exciting. There was nothing quite like it anywhere in the world.
Mr. Bowler was a former ABC journalist who reported on the campaign to legalise two-up in 1983.
It's Australia's symbiotic gambling game, and Kalgoorlie is the home of that game. It's a fair game. I hope it continues, and particularly continues during the annual race round.
The race round is Kalgoorlie Boulder's annual spring racing carnival and previously coincided with the World Two-Up Championships, which have not been held in many years. Dave Sheehan says the race round is by far the busiest time of year for two-up punters.
Well, there was one time Big Willy Willy came through here. I think it was over the round and took the money up 100 metres up in the air. There was notes going through the bush. People chasing after it. But, a lot of funny things.
The game's future is being taken on by Danny's son, Jack.
Pretty nerve-wracking at first because a lot of pressure, but it gets a bit easier as you do it more. Pretty high stakes, yeah. People pretty passionate about it when they've got money involved, so, yeah, you got to try and concentrate.
It's hoped he can continue the family tradition.
Hopefully, you know, who knows? We're just kind of living in the present, really. Yeah, we've got to keep it going as long as we can.
Does it feel like you're keeping your dad's memory alive to a degree? Is that part of it as well? I mean,
yeah, and a lot of the old blokes that used to come out here, yeah, exactly. Yeah. He'd probably still watching somewhere. Where else do you get a setting like this, you know? Out in the bush, it's people come out and... Where else do you get a place like this? Dad used to say this is a work of art, he said. You know, good enough to keep the weather off, but not so they want to pinch it. Yeah.
A chorus of blow dryers and mooing cattle fill the stables at Adelaide Showgrounds as children listen carefully for the call of their number.
98, 95, 55.
It's the school holidays, but these young people have swapped video games for mucking stalls in the hope of taking home a blue ribbon. I'm Eliza Burlage and I'm at the South Australian Junior Heifer Expo, the largest annual beef education event in the country. I'm meeting some of the hundreds of young people from across the country who attend this event, where they compete for the best heifer in show.
Just in my blood. I love it. Yeah? Yeah.
The reason I love coming here is because it's a great experience to be outdoors and make new friends, see some mates, spend time with cattle. My whole family's done it for years and years.
It's just like... good experience to learn how to do this stuff, and yeah, you can go a long way with this stuff.
Heifers are young female cattle that usually haven't become a cow yet by birthing a calf. Preparing heifer for the show ring requires the right look and a great deal of attention to detail.
I'm combing the tail head, I'm gluing it like up, so you put a bit of glue on there. And you put it, and then you let it dry in, and you go to the other side. And then once that dries in, you comb it up a little bit, and then so then it's straight, and it gives you the illusion that it's long.
And what's the hardest bit about getting cattle ready?
Definitely the tail head. Definitely this, because you got to put the glue in there, wait for it to dry, and if it dries wrong, you got to wash it out and restart it.
One thing you have to do when you're brushing them, you have to brush always towards the head. it will make him like look longer and stuff.
You got to start from there and go along, and then when you get here, you got to go up, and then you got to brush it up and forward.
For 18-year-old competitor Bianca Wood, showing cows is a side hobby to her main job, running an 11,000-acre property in South Australia's southeast, with breeding cows and stud bulls.
If you told me 6 years ago this is what you're going to be doing now, I would have looked at you and gone, what? Like 6 years ago, I didn't even know showing cows was a sport, really. It's a pretty big thing in my life now. Today is cattle judging, where we prep our heifers or steers here even. And I took in my heifer today and she placed first in her class.
Were you expecting a win?
She's a pretty good heifer, so I'm probably biased if I say I do. But yeah, it was definitely very happy for me that she got the win, so yeah.
And what have been the best tips that you've heard from others or that you've shared with others at the expo?
Probably just how to lead, like how to brush an animal, how to blow dry, wash, all everything really. In terms of clipping, I've watched heaps of videos on YouTube, read books, just watched people. So I've sort of self-taught myself to clip.
Is it hard to clip a heifer?
When she moves around a lot, yes. I suppose just having a steady hand really helps, and knowing your plan of attack, knowing the structure of your animal really helps.
And what's something that people might not know, might be surprised to learn about working with cattle?
Definitely their temperament. Like when you come to a rural show and you see people walk through the sheds, like a lot of them are wary of cattle. Like some cattle do kick when they get scared, but it's just because they're scared. They're trying to protect themselves, like a fight or flight. I suppose just knowing where beef comes from is a really big thing, because a lot of people, obviously, with animal activism, it's really amazing seeing people walk through the sheds and you teach them where their beef comes from, how much farmers love their animals. Yeah, it's a really big thing.
And it's not just kids from farming backgrounds that are devotees to the sport. SA Junior Heifer President Jono Spence says it's a great learning opportunity for anyone interested in the livestock industry.
There's a number of people, including myself. I mean, I originate from Flinders Park here in Adelaide, and I wouldn't be in the livestock industry or indeed agriculture if family friends hadn't invited me back in 1989 to attend this great event. And it has given me some wonderful opportunities and a career in agriculture and lifelong friends.
South Australian Junior Heifer President Jono Spence ending that story from Eliza Burledge. Before that, Jared Lucas brought us some of the history of the game of two-up from the Western Australian goldfields town of Kalgoorlie. You can see more on that story, including old footage of punters playing two-up many years ago. You'll find it on the ABC website. Just look for A Big Country. I'm Clint Jasper with you for A Big Country. Still to come, we're climbing aboard a tall ship that's teaching sailing and life skills, and we'll meet the highly skilled women working their trade in saddleries around the country.
I love making things from scratch. I always have. Like, before I started here, I used to sew, and I was always making things with my hands.
Erin is one of six young women working at Kent's Saddlery, located in Stanthorpe on Queensland's Southern Downs.
Making something as special as the things that I get to work on here is awesome. I love it.
Hello, I'm Arlie Felton-Taylor, and I'm meeting some of the highly skilled young women taking up the reins on this work of making horse equipment by hand. Megan is another of the women working here, helping to make saddles.
So I mostly take care of all the sort of saddle components that then get put together to become the saddle. So I'm making all the little pieces and the finer details that then become the saddle.
Anna has been putting together the pieces to make a bridle.
I make leather and webbing ones. Webbing ones usually take me like a day to make about 10, and leather ones probably a day to make about 6.
And as Abby explains, they work with PVC, but mostly with leather.
I've never worked with anything quite like leather. It's kind of soft but tough. and it wears pretty well. I like the heritage stuff because it has a lot of character.
Shari is in a more senior role at the saddlery and says some of their staff have come to them after doing work experience or even apprenticeships.
I think they're just looking for a unique work opportunity to get out and use their hands. A lot of them are horsey girls, love horses, so they're drawn to this industry in that way. But I think that, yeah, they really are passionate about, the quality of the gear, being able to make something from scratch with your hands, and seeing people being able to use it daily, especially the gear that goes out on the stations. It's really being worked really hard, and it's, you know, somebody's tool and it's their best mate that they're using all day, every day, and to be a part of creating something of that quality, they really love it.
She says apart from that satisfaction, they're also gaining a qualification.
Definitely. So Josh and Leah actually put in a huge amount of work reinstating the Certificate 3 in leather production, so that it's accredited again and so that the young people can come here and leave with a piece of paper, because we all know how important that piece of paper is these days.
And while for many years it's been a male-dominated industry, the new recruits are relishing the work. Maddie says she loves it.
Like, once you're here, you don't get treated differently. So I think that's the biggest thing. There's no sexist or anything. You're just equal and that's it.
Is there anything you feel like you can't do because you're a woman?
Not really. I can. I feel like I could do it if I wanted to. But at the end of the day, they're always there to help. So if you can't lift something, they're always happy to do it. So
Erin explains because it's such physical work, it makes her approach things differently.
You're being told no. I feel like there's always a way around it. Like, I've been told that I'm not strong enough to do some things, but if you just think about it for a little while, you'll sometimes figure out a different way to do it.
Megan's success gives her confidence.
Probably for all the young women out there looking for jobs in their industry, just go for it. Like, the worst you can be told is no. So if there's an opportunity, just do it.
Nearly 150 kilometres due north, another workplace is boasting a 50-50 gender split, with half their workforce made up of young women. Meet Kelsey, who works at Australian Stockman's Saddlery in Toowoomba.
I think leather work in general, it's good to see more women doing it.
Everything that we make in store here, we actually, basically to an extent, we make out the back. So I just finished doing stirrup leathers, just onto another task, doing 2A pouches at the moment, and then, yeah, the list is never ending.
Amanda had worked in other industries but loves her job making tack for horses.
It was very much a different side of horses. Like, you know, I've grown up with horses, used, you know, leather gear and everything, but hasn't been on the other side, so, yeah.
And that process of upskilling, what's that been like?
Challenging. Every day is a different day. You are always learning something. Well, learning how to do something different and obviously to better yourself. So, like, I do pretty well 90% of the strapping gear. So if I compare it to, like, one of the first bridles I did, I would be disgusted to, you know, some of the stuff I do now. I'm very much a perfectionist, and I do all the custom saddle pads too. So, like, the stitching, you're pretty anal about, you know, how straight you are on the stitching, because they're out in public.
Saddlery owner Chrissy Knight says she's in awe of her young staff.
Our team's just wonderful. The dynamic's really good. Lots of good humour and a nice vibe in the workplace. We just feel like that they are quite capable of doing the things that are required of them. They like to produce a product that's pretty neat and tidy, aesthetically pleasing, as well as quality. So they do put a lot of time and care into that. And yeah, they just really have a real passion for the design of the product. So both of our ladies are actually out using the gear, and they are in the horse industry, so they like to always see how our designs perform as well.
Kelsey sees this as an industry she could be involved with for the rest of her life.
I never actually, when I first started saddlery, I never realised how much work is involved in actual the making of a saddle, how it can go from just a timber tree to a completed saddle. Like, it's, the process is quite phenomenal.
On the
more topper staysail, easing out on the downhaul, hauling in on the hatches.
There's a flurry of activity on board the Windward Bound as the crew readies the ship for sail. The tall ship, or Brigandine, is a youth development vessel, and its captain is Sarah Parry.
We take young folks to sea for periods of up to 10 days or so, and challenge them, basically. It's drawing them out of their comfort zone and away from their normal life, and it gives them a chance to meet their capabilities without, because as a teenager they don't often recognise what their capabilities are yet, and this is a way of showing them that they can actually overcome what might seem to them at the time enormous obstacles.
Hello, I'm Katrina Bevan, and I've climbed aboard the Windward Bound at the Gladstone Marina in central Queensland. This ship has sailed all the way from Tasmania. It's modelled on a vessel built in Boston in 1848, and it looks a bit like something out of a pirate movie. Captain Sarah Parry says for the young people on board, the voyage is a valuable learning experience.
They work the ship, of course, so they learn to work the ship. But they learn to put up with lots and lots of challenges like seasickness and climbing up the mast. On day one of a voyage, they're up the mast because they work the ship. We have a professional crew on board of three qualified captains, as well as half a dozen deckhands. And three of those deckhands become watch leaders, they're leading hands. And they work with the kids and teach them how to set the sails, how to do this, how to do that, and gradually introduce them into doing it and taking charge of it themselves.
It casts quite a picture in the marina amongst the modern-looking boats and yachts.
The little kids love it as a pirate ship, and every time Pirates of the Caribbean comes out, we get a whole swag of people that want to come and have a look. It's a very simple vessel to operate, but it's much more complex than a yacht, much more complex than a power vessel. So it's about them having to make that ship spread its wings and sail from point A to point B.
17-year-old Lily Watson from Gladstone is one of the young people heading out on the ship's latest voyage, a round trip from and back to the port city.
I just thought it would be a very, very fun experience and, you know, get out of my comfort zone and do something different. The ship is so cool. I was like, wow. I've seen photos of kids climbing the sail I just think it's very cool, very, very old and very nice.
The teenagers, who often go on the voyages with help from their local Rotary clubs, don't have access to their mobile phones throughout the voyage, something that doesn't faze Lily one bit.
More independence and, I don't know, not have to rely on other people, and even with my phone, you know, not so addicted to the screen and all that. I've been trying to, like, stop my phone addiction, but this, I think, will make it much better and easier to stop being on my phone all the time. I just want to be outdoors more and in nature more.
It was the 1960s when Captain Sarah Parry, a former member of the Navy, saw sail training work happening in the United States and Europe. She thought it would be great to bring a similar concept to Australia.
We looked around quite considerably to try and look at getting an existing vessel, but most of these existing vessels were very old. There was very little around in those days. And it was in the 1980s before we actually got round to firmly doing anything about it. And we laid the keel in 1990, and she was launched in 1996, started sailing in 1998, and we've been doing this ever since. We've had nearly 6,000 young Australians through the ship in that time frame.
According to Sarah, a former Rotary board member who had moved from Tasmania to central Queensland suggested sailing the vessel to Gladstone to commemorate 100 years of Rotary in Australia in 2020. But the pandemic put a stop to that plan until this year.
We realised that this year, 2023, is the 100 years of Rotary in Queensland. So that's why we're up here, helping celebrate Rotary's 100th anniversary. There's sponsorship available on all of the voyages from local Rotary clubs to assist them getting on board. We have a philosophy that nobody ever misses out on a voyage because they can't afford it. But we give people a helping hand. We like them to fundraise themselves to get some of the money themselves so they've got some ownership of the voyage. But generally speaking, nobody ever misses out because of that.
Well then, make faster downhaul.
Sarah Parry, captain of the Windward Bound, ending that story from Katrina Bevan at the Gladstone Marina on the central Queensland coast. You can see photos of the Windward Bound. It does look a little bit like a pirate ship. Just head online to the ABC homepage and look for A Big Country. That's the show for today. Thanks for listening and bye for now.
Listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.